We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Welcome to another episode of Spin the Rally Pod. I'm Brenton Kelly. Today joining me is Nate Tennis and Jack Harrison here to talk about Olympus Rally. Guys?
Yeah, we went.
Yeah, what can you tell me about Olympus?
I mean, it was a great event, a bit of a car breaker, it sounded like. It traditionally is a bit of a car breaker, and that's one of our points of pride for being in the Northwest. Like, yeah, we're really rough, and we break stuff. it lived up to it.
Yeah, you know, coming off of 100 Acre being so smooth, and obviously Snowdrift this year not being very snowy, it was interesting, like, not many cars dropped out the first two rounds, and now third round was just brutal.
Yeah, was it something like 42 cars finished all in all from 70-something that started?
Yeah, I think it was like 72, 73-ish started, and then by the end of day one, it was like 41. Yeah. Obviously, a bunch more rejoined, but yeah, it was like, and then probably back to 40, which is wild. Like, yeah. Almost half the field was gone.
Yeah, we were at the first spectator area hanging out. It was stage 3 and 6. And the difference of quantity of vehicles from the third stage to the sixth stage was crazy.
Yeah, it was remarkable. Like, you see them come through the second time and you're like counting on your fingers. Like, we're missing 4 cars. Okay.
Yeah, it was, tough weekend for Sam, tough weekend for Sean. Richo and Michelle, obviously one got their class win, but it was tough following them. A lot of people lost brakes this weekend. Kind of surprised by that. Did you guys hear much about that at all?
I did. I heard that Sam popped a brake line somewhere and ended up finishing the stage with a screwdriver jammed in and on 3 brakes. But it was a weird Olympus, even for, you know, Pacific Northwest conditions, like being so dry going into it. I mean, we were talking on the last podcast, last time I ran it was dry. And it doesn't mean that the roads are more compact. It means that you're still digging down, but you don't have any slop to sort of give you a bit of cushion. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was catching people off guard and, you know, hitting a hard rock on a rough surface that's going to damage your brake somehow.
I was just going to say, like, the weather conditions, like the stuff we saw even last year, the really, really rough, abrasive stuff, it hasn't gotten any better. We had another very wet winter, and the owners of the roads, when they go and repair something, put in these massive chunky rocks, and I think that's contributing to a lot of it too. They're just like a pile of obsidian basically, and just slices up everything.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was gonna say. Is, you know, I wrecked some of the roads and I was like, wow, this looks a little bit rougher, a little bit more potholy than years prior. Like, it's a rough rally normally, but it felt rougher. And then talking to a few people, they said, whoever, what is it, Green Diamond, is that the roads we're on?
Yeah,
logging roads. Yep. Yeah, so Green Diamond apparently is putting down these rocks that are just, I keep saying softball or baseball size, but for our UK fans, that's, you know, let's say grapefruit. You guys eat grapefruits over there?
Yes, we eat grapefruits.
Like, grapefruit size rocks as gravel, and as a road that's like that big, that's brutal. And we were seeing a lot of those rocks take cars out, especially, I mean, everybody, the rear ends were catching brake lines and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is the first time we're seeing reasonable weather. So, you know, the Green Diamond doesn't waste their effort repairing the road. So they do it after we beat them up, yeah. Typically. So we're getting the worst conditions out of the whole cycle of their road usage. And it just gets nasty.
Yeah. It was interesting, like you're saying, though, this year being a bit drier starting off the race. It's not typical we see that much dust at Olympus. You know, tell me about that years prior. Have you had conditions like this before? Or is it kind of the perfect storm to just be one of the rougher Olympuses that we've seen?
Olympi.
Olympi.
You know, it's kind of funny. Olympus, for a while, the name of the event being Olympus, it was actually called the Wild West Rally. And it used to be September-ish, if I recall correctly, or a bit later in the year. So dry was pretty common. And this area, when we get dry, it means dust, like huge clouds of dust. Point of reference in difference between a November 1986 Olympus versus the, I think it was June when they did it in 87. Very dry, very, very dusty. So a complete stark contrast of event conditions. So I have run it in the past, and man, the dust is just brutal.
Yeah.
We underlings always have 1 minute intervals, so we're just stuck dealing with all the dust everywhere. I mean, fortunately, there was wind due to the weather changing so drastically, so that helped clear things, but it still lingers in the trees. Like, the wind doesn't really mess when you're in the shaded areas, and then you go from bright white light to dust into the dark with hanging dust, and it's very, very difficult to see.
Yeah, you know, I spoke to Preston Osborne on the start of day one about the conditions, and he said, you know, it's not often we're talking about dust windows prior to Olympus, but it was already on their minds whether they were going to have to start doing some stuff like that. And with 73 cars and the day one ending so late, that would have been a big change up. But luckily, I think right around stage six, right when that started, was when we started to see some of that rainfall, and that was just enough to keep the dust down.
And I think with the Pacific Northwest soil, it holds water really well, so it becomes very sloppy in the mud that you sort of tend to expect racing out in, you know, the spring and rallying. But as it begins to dry, it doesn't get like drier and drier and drier and then becomes dust. It's sort of slop. The moment it dries out, it becomes that dust right away.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the competitors saw that with a little bit of rain coming through where they're worried about dust windows. It gets a little rain on it, and then suddenly all the dust is gone, and now you're driving on greasy material.
Yeah.
So I think it sort of explains seeing some of the offs and the DNFs, where it's generally not a big off. It's just someone overcooked a corner because they're expecting a little bit of grip. They go to brake, and it's gone from this dry dust to, oh, maybe it's a little damp now, to just immediate grease. We see it here at the school all the time, where you're driving on dust, it begins to rain, and suddenly the conditions are 100% different.
Yeah, you know, like putting the water down here, right?
Yeah.
Like, we put the water down, and 15 minutes later, it's completely dried. Like, we'll put almost 1,000 gallons of water down on the course that we've pumped out of the ground, put it right back onto the ground, and it, within minutes, the sun's out, it's gone.
There's no middle stage,
yeah.
You know, where it's like wet, damp, dry. It just goes from sodden to bone dry. There's no in between.
Yeah. Looking at the competition, though, this weekend, what was your guys' perspective on that? I know you guys made it out to some stages, got to see some stuff. What can you tell me about your perspective there?
I think through the regional field, you got a real fight in some areas, and then it really was just a rally of attrition more than anything else. The competition came then not so much stage times, but whether you were cognizant enough to keep it on the road, right? Being able to read the conditions right. I think it's one of the rougher rallies on the calendar and really is a fight for survival. And the ones who were able to back off were the ones that were able to benefit from it. And the ones who just made one split second decision at the wrong time are the ones that failed off of it.
Yeah.
What about you? Yeah, it's, you know, this is basically the first event in the area for a lot of folks. Like, we did have Wild West for those who were lucky enough to get into it. But, you know, there's a lot of cobweb blowing out. There's a lot of pent-up excitement.
Yeah.
After being several months of not being able to rally, and then, yeah, this is my first event. It's a national event. Look at this. There's photographers. I'm going to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So there's a lot of like, hey, throttle it back. It's a long event.
Yeah.
So I think you see a little bit of that as well.
You know, Sam, our very own Sam Albert, kind of has...
Our very own.
Yeah, exactly.
We own him.
We own Sam. We wish we owned that Ferrari V8, but
exactly.
Yeah. Sam's got that thing pretty sorted out now, but I think just the conditions, like we've been talking about, is what really got him. You know, he doesn't know exactly when that had happened, that issue he had. You know, I was at a restaurant doing our upload for the morning video, and I got a text that just said, Sam rolled. And I was like, instantly to the Rally Safe app, where is Sam? What's going on? 15 seconds later, he's back on the road, but we'd heard he rolled. So yeah.
Yeah, we were at the spectator area. It was like, yep, bad news. Sam rolled. He's okay. I'm like, no, he just went by. Yeah. And looked a little off pace, but no, he looked fine. And that's the beauty of rally rumors.
Yeah.
Like, we're always in the middle of nowhere and have like barely any cell service, or, you know, we're far away from any of the organizers, so we don't get an opportunity to see what's going on. And then just the rumor mill that's generated mm-hmm. in the middle of the event. It's like, yeah, he was on fire, went upside down, yeah. He was running around, his hair's on fire and everything. It's like, no, he got a puncture, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And I could tell it was bad service when I got that text, because it was one of those repeat texts where you could tell they'd been trying to get it out. And I got four texts in a row that said, Sam rolled, Sam rolled, Sam rolled, but he's back on the road. So Brian and I, our marketing lead here at the school, we head right to stage six. You know, we saw he was on stage, so we could see some movement. It looked like it was slowing down, and then all of a sudden he had movement again. So he had stopped to change a flat is what we found out. But we were at the end of stage six. Sam rolled up to the finish. Not rolled, but we drove up to the finish.
Phrasing.
Yeah, and I could see that the car was fine. I was like, unless he rolled and landed perfectly back on the wheels, and it was more of a hop roll, I don't think he rolled. And as he rolled, I keep saying rolled. As he pulled in, we could hear some noises and see a little bit of bumper damage. And Sam hopped out, and he said, I've got no brakes. And then I start looking at all the corners. He told me to take a look in that corner, and you could see the caliper was completely gone. The rotor had broke off and was just kind of spinning around on its own there. Oof. In the hub. So it was obviously not a roll, but a little bit of damage, and nothing specific that caught him or caused to see that problem, but just had that flat. Both bolts broke off, it looked like, on the caliper mount. So they weren't able to mount that caliper back up for those last two stages, and he just had to run it on three brakes.
Right.
Yeah, exactly right. He was talking about it with the locking diff in the rear. It didn't make too much of a difference. You know, that one brake still does slow down that other wheel a little bit mm-hmm. with that diff being locked. So he didn't notice it a ton. But as he went out for Nawatzel, they had a couple of other problems that just moved down the line once they had fixed up that corner. So still had some issues, but got that thing sorted out for the morning on day two.
Brakes really are a crutch, really.
Yeah.
You don't really need them. It's mainly just a pass tech.
Yeah. As long as you don't cruise through tech. Yeah. Yeah. And Sean Edwards, you know, had the similar situation. Did you guys have a chance to catch up with Sean at all?
Yeah. I spoke with him a little bit coming into service. It sounds like, they fell prey to how rough the rally is, really. Heard that they popped a brake line at some point. So had to have sort of a rally fix on that to limp back to service and get that fixed up. And then was it the first pass of Nawatzel? I think they ended up popping an axle. We saw them from the spectator area as they rotated in. And Jack DeShawn and Kendra, it sounds like it happened right at that corner. So as they came through and they get back on power, and you can see the rear just sort of shimmy weird. And I remember clocking the time, it's like, that car moved strangely there. That shouldn't happen on throttle. And then, yeah, just as they got out of sight, I guess, is when they recognized that they popped the axle and had no power. So really, really rough. Had the chance to speak to him at service, and they were popping back to Arlington to go pick up a fresh set of axles to get in for day two. Haven't had the chance to catch up with him after the event, so I didn't hear anything that happened on day two with him.
Yeah, I only got a couple words with him briefly at the end, but just for perspective, Arlington and their shop that they went to at the end of day one was, what, a two-hour drive or something?
Yeah, it's closer to three. Yeah. Okay. That's a long day.
Easily, yeah.
I think the second run of Nawatzel they didn't make it to,
if I'm
remembering that correctly.
Yeah.
So basically made it to the end of the day almost, and then had that three-hour drive to go get their axles.
A three-hour drive back.
Yeah, three-hour drive back, exactly. So, I mean, what a journey to be able to get back to the start of day two. And they brought, he said, three extra spare axles by the time they were ready. So,
yeah. Chatted with Kendra Miller, his co-driver, last night, also an instructor at Dirtfish. And she mentioned that the new axle had some sort of an issue at thinking maybe the lugs had backed out or something. And then they sheared all the lug nuts and lost a wheel and broke a brake rotor and all of the goodness. So, I think rear end upgrades are in order, coming soon.
All this, all the rocks, man. Like, pave all the roads. That's what rally's about.
Yeah. Pave all the
there's,
roads.
There's a reason they paved Daytona.
Get out of here.
Get out.
You know, I talked to Sean at the end of day one, you know, like with all these upgrades and everything he's done. And it's one of those things where, you know, you reinforce one thing and you're just moving the problem down the line. And
yeah,
he said
exactly.
It's kind of where they're at now is shifting that problem closer to the diff. And now it seems like they're probably going to have to do some new upgrades for the next round, knowing that they have a different geometry and a little more beefy stuff in that corner to take those impacts. It kind of, the axle took the brunt of it.
And most of us, club rallyists know it's not necessarily a new part. It's just new to the car.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's still a 35, 40-year-old part that's being bolted onto the thing. So,
and yeah. I don't know. Definitely on like the Subarus and the all-wheel drive cars, in my experience, they've always told me, you know, if it's a left axle, you want to keep that as a left axle because there's just the stress on the metal. It's something to think about. Sometimes people throw those left axles on the rear right, and now all of a sudden it snaps immediately.
Yeah, and considering it was a Volvo, it probably only saw the grocery store and home.
Yeah, exactly.
25 miles an hour max. So there, Volvo people.
Yeah, you know, looking back at the National, though, obviously Brandon Seminuk taking the win. Pretty smooth cruise for him this weekend. Pretty comfortable. You know, he's got a lot of experience here. He told us that he was using his notes from last year where they could. So that gives him a little bit of benefit and a little bit less work to have to do. A couple changes here or there. But on that two-pass recce, you know, that first pass starting with notes already is a lot easier to approach the road opposed to saying you're starting from scratch. So something to think about there. Looking back, though, for that second and third place battle, what can you guys tell me about that? Nick Allen and Javier Oliveras. Do you guys know anything about that battle?
So I met Nick for the first time this weekend. I obviously reported on his name through the last couple of seasons, but actually putting a face to the name coming out of Live Center. He's in a new car. Is it a Rally 3 that he's in now? And this is the first time that he was competing in it?
Well, he debuted the car at 100 Acre, and then he tested that same car here at testing. And I see the car, and it's got the beautiful wrap on it, gray and bright yellow, the Eagle Rock Racing, if I'm remembering that right.
I think so.
Yeah. He's always got that eagle screech noise under the hood.
Yeah.
And then when we see him at the start, all of a sudden, it was, you know, it's a Rally 3, so a pretty noticeable car. But then at the start, it's completely white. Did you guys notice that at all?
Absolutely,
yeah.
I saw a little bit of the interview that you had with
him. Yeah. So I see him at the start, and I'm like, why would they unwrap the car? The thing looked beautiful. So I hadn't been up to speed on that, and I didn't find out until later that night that they had had some overheating issues at the end of 100 Acre, thought it was fine, and then they came back here, and at testing, started to see those overheating issues again. So he had hit up Javier Oliveras, who also runs a Rally 3, to see if he has spare parts. And they thought maybe it was a head gasket. Do you have another motor or a head gasket? And Javier said, no, I don't, but I have a spare car. So he rented him his spare car, which was identical to the car. I think there's a little bit of differences there at the gearbox. Nick was saying one was an Evo and one wasn't, so I don't know which one was which. But he said the gearing was slightly different in the car than what he was used to. So he was renting Javier's car. So, you know,
and then proceeded to beat him.
Exactly, yeah. Which was a pretty close battle. I think they're only 19 seconds apart or something like that at the end of day one, which is awesome to see in that limited four-wheel drive class for National, seeing a good battle like that. And obviously for second place overall. Going into day two, I talked to Nick, and he said, you know, I don't think I have the pace to beat him, but I'm going to try. And it's great to see that battle happen a little bit here or there. And then going into the power stage, he had it pretty much locked up and just had to bring it home. But yeah, I mean, tough for Javier getting beat in your own car a little bit, but yeah.
Javier is finding so much pace as he's getting more and more comfortable, you know, reporting on him last season as he was sort of figuring out this car, and then watching him each event where he's starting to move up the field, he's starting to throw down some really strong times, and them and the Helmut team are really sort of starting to lock in a consistent pace and ride with him. I mean, still podiumed.
Yeah. I think he's podiumed 5 out of the last 6 events.
Exactly.
He did. So
yeah,
it's great to see that pace and continuing to grow that pace throughout. And same thing with Nick. You know, we saw Nick try to do that full National push last year, and he had that big off at Ohio that we saw there in his R2. He was still in the front wheel drives then. Came back with a different car towards the end of the year, and then kind of surprised us all when he showed up with a Rally 3 this year. So it was pretty cool to see.
Those are such strong cars. I've got a bit of an affinity for the Rally 3s. I think they're awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I would say the only thing that's going against them is they don't look as special as they are.
Right.
They just look like a standard Fiesta, but man, they are not.
Yeah, we were just talking about that the other day, right? How it's just like you see it and it's like, oh, it's a Fiesta. You could assume it's an old R2 almost. I mean, a little bit different body differences there's nothing that gives it away that this thing is a proper machine.
They are really, really special. I haven't driven one, but I've ridden in one and it's impressive. Like a little 3-cylinder in there and it actually throws your head back into the seat when it launches. And like the suspension is beautifully dialed. The car moves around really, really well. They did their homework, M Sport did. It's a great package.
Yeah, it's cool to see the stuff they've done with the spares too, you know, having like the rear right knuckle and dampers, the front left or something like that. But basically you can cut your spares package in half and not have to have a complete setup of the car, which gets quite expensive.
The under tray underneath it has NACA ducts that feed into the rear diff cooler. Like it's gorgeous. Like the things are just really, really well.
Just throw more wings on it.
That's basically the first time Nate's ever going to say, let's throw more wings and spoilers on it.
I think one of my favorite parts of the Rally 3 is the fact that it has an ECU cooler. Have you seen that?
it needs it.
Right? Like of all things to put cooling on, you know, you can cool your brakes, you can cool your engine, but let's cool the ECU. That's just a proper form to think how much computer is running that thing.
Yeah, brain coolant.
Yeah. Moving down the line to two-wheel drive stuff, you know, Derek Nelson bringing home the overall win for open two-wheel drive. Michael Hooper having second place there for open two-wheel drive, but interesting to see Hooper, you know, working with Michael Hordijk. Yeah, I think it's Hordijk. So, you know, he's been co-driving for Hooper all year and now hops in with Derek. And now all of a sudden, you know, maybe it's the co-driver doing some extra work there.
Yeah, Derek didn't just suddenly get fast.
No, Derek's been quick properly. And can you touch on that car a little bit? That thing's got some history in ARA, especially with last year. That may have been possibly a championship car.
Yeah, so that's the same car that Leah Block was competing in the open two-wheel drive category. And it's a Derek's build in the first place. He's been racing that and dialing that thing in for years now. And it's a monster of a BRZ. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that is a proper car. I think it's like double A arm suspension, everything.
Yeah, actually, there were two cars built in our shop here at Dirtfish when Derek used to work here. And they basically lopped off the front and rear ends of the thing and CAD designed complete tubular front and rear suspension using all kinds of different components, massively huge brakes, Sadev sequential gearbox. He went turbocharged for his. The car that was kept at the school was meant for more of an initial basic car, so it stayed stock engine basically, but the same spec all the way through. His has bit more refinement being the second build of it. And then we added the supercharger and proceeded to blow everything up even faster.
Yeah, you seem to know a lot about that car. Maybe you've done some stuff in that car?
I made an attempt at the 2021 Open Two-Wheel Drive Championship, and we had a lot of teething issues. Okay. But fantastic car. It has since had a bit more attention spent on it. Our very own Josie Rimmer has been racing that one, two events now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She did Olympus last year, and most of Tour de Forest year before. So, still a great package. In fact, it's on display at the Women in Motorsports, display at the LeMay Museum in Tacoma.
And I've heard that, just as a side note, they've renamed the LeMay. Did you hear this? I heard this morning.
No.
I've heard it's now...
Other than LeMay Limousin?
Yeah, LeMay Limousin. That's it. That's what they changed it to. That's actually... Yeah. They heard you and then they're like, yeah, that's better. That's way better.
Some kind of like French or something.
But moving down the line, limited two-wheel drive, you know, something else, another driver close to home for us. Yay. And we may have had a...
I'm so excited for Richo and Michelle. Like, you know, we talked about it on the last podcast, like... Richard, when he first came out, was like, okay, rallying's pretty cool. And immediately after taking the class was like, okay, how do I start rallying? And so obviously he's been through like the advanced programs. We've worked with him all the way through, and then having Michelle co-driving for him, you know, one of our senior instructors, and finding success last year and going for a full national challenge this year, showing up and winning their class for that. I'm stoked for him. He's such a top bloke. So
yeah, you know, it's great to see him progress. You know, last year Olympus was his first ever rally, mm-hmm. and that was as a co-driver. And then he hopped in the driver's seat for Oregon, and I just had, you know, the opportunity to be there for the end of that first super special stage. I think he was maybe last on the road to start Oregon because they, well, last on the road, yeah. but they do the
inverted start order.
Exactly, yeah. inverted store yeah. start order. So first time rallying, he has to be first on the road.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah,
exactly. No pressure, no pressure.
Yeah. Welcome to the sport.
Yeah, I'm like possibly, possibly the most spectators of any super special too at PIR there in Portland. Yeah. But I got to see him at the end of the first stage. He was like, I did it, I finished the stage. Like, it's so yeah. great. And now to see him finally get that first overall podium here has just been a great process to witness.
Yeah, it sure has. He's such a nice guy, and one of those where, you know, he's broadly diverse in a bunch of different disciplines. So that I think helps anyone with becoming successful in rallying or any form of sport or motorsport. But he's just genuinely has such a great attitude, and always has a smile and is always willing to talk and say hi and give you a hug, and just has a very cool, open nature about him. So it's really fun when someone like that is successful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not that, you know, jerks can't be successful, and but no, he's just such a cool guy, and it's awesome that we've been able to play a part in seeing his rise to fame, as it were.
Yeah, you know, definitely just like what we talked about in the last podcast was him coming here after LSPR and wanting to run that specific corner that he had that off on, like to be able to help him in not just normal ways, but very specific ways, you know, looking to replicate a very singular corner and run this over and over and over so that he can break that idea or that little incident that he had happen. Like, how can I get over that? It's been great to be able to support that.
Yeah, and it's cool to, that's I think one of the biggest benefits of rally school in general. Like, I had a very unique upbringing in that I started with rally, and for me it was, well, we'll go out to the woods, we'll block a road off and break as many things until we sort of figure it out.
Yeah.
But you never get a chance to just take one corner and do like basically a corner study and just go hit it multiple ways. Try this brake pressure, try that. What happens when you do this? The ability to do that is hugely beneficial, mm-hmm. because you'll see that one corner, you know, once,
yeah.
but you won't, and you can kind of start to track what happened here and there, but to be able to set something up and replicate it is extremely valuable. And that's been one of the interesting things I've seen from, as a driver myself. It's just, hey, you get a chance to not have any pressure. You're not in a race. You can just have at it a few times and see what happens.
Yeah, you know, limiting those variabilities. You know, you get a left three in a rally and it's, you're like, okay, this is what a left three is. But when you can actually set up a left three and say, I want to just run a three repeatedly, it's like nice to isolate that kind of thing.
Yeah, right? And it just condenses the amount of time that someone learns something. You know, eventually, you'll learn how to take a left three in every condition. But if you get, that might take 5 years, it might take 20 years,
yeah, yeah.
But if you can break it down, you can accomplish that same thing in 20 minutes, theoretically.
Yeah.
I think it shows that performance athlete mindset as well, where it's like, there's you've had an off or you've had an incident. And the first thought isn't like, wow, that was crazy. We'll do better next time. It's like, right. Improvement immediately. How can we go back and start pushing
yeah.
this and
yeah.
work in privates with high level drivers and high level athletes, that's their first mindset. You know, when you schedule a private, the instructor will reach out to them like, okay, what do you want to be focusing on? What's your goal? Some of them is like, hey, I want to be testing the roads. I've never been up to the Northwest. I'm racing in a couple of weeks. So great. That's a goal in and of itself. And then you get the drivers who come through like, I worked on this at the last event. This is my big focus for it. This is what I want to be improving on. So, right, we'll go throw pendulum turns for 8 hours if that's what we need. But they're dialed in the whole time, and Richard like really shows that.
Yeah,
And that's a reflection of that, like, open, positive attitude, too.
Sure.
It's not, well, you know, the car, blah, 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 or there's a boulder there, you know, blah, blah, blah.
You're right, I need more power.
Exactly, you need more power, obviously. It's like, no, I made a mistake here, or I had a close call. I want to focus on that and make myself better instead of adding more power or a couple more wings.
Yeah, yeah. Always could use a couple more wings. Definitely. you know, moving down the line, just their limited two-wheel drive, Sean Donnelly, you know, last year's champion for limited two-wheel, had some decent little battles with Richo throughout the weekend, but he did run into some issues. I talked to Sean at the beginning of day two, and it sounds like they, on New Watzel, I think it was the last running, the transmission kind of went out, and they couldn't get it into gear at all, and they were pulled over for a second, and he was able to get it into third, and they just finished the stage off in third gear.
You know, nice.
Sean's been having kind of a tough go this year. He had that clutch go out at Snowdrift, lost brakes at 100 Acre, and now having that little gearbox issue. They put a brand new gearbox in for day two, so he was still able to... He finished day one, so it wasn't non-compete or anything. He was still competing, but did have a couple little car issues there. But great to see him battling there with Richo a little bit.
And so I understand it's part of the sport in rallying that you know, being able to rely on the vehicle and being able to push it. And being able to maintain the car is, you know, an important part of motorsport anyway, especially being a fan, that's some of the excitement for it. But it's absolutely gutting when you hear that it's just a mechanical issue that you had no control over. And you're just like, here's a good race. Oh, man, like a clutch going out, or your transmission failing. That's not necessarily something you're doing as a driver, unless, you know, you're just jamming it into gear with no clutch. Because that's real racing. But yeah, it's just gutting to hear for Sean. But, you know, I caught up with him beginning of the event. We were kind of catching up on how the previous events have worked out. And I'm excited for the guy. Just every time you talk to him, he's just so focused. So picking things up, moving on to OTR. Best luck for him, especially having mechanical issues and he's still podiuming him from it.
Like, yeah.
He's one to watch.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he's so determined, and it's great to see him come back after 100 Acre with that sort of incident and just come back and right back to it.
Yep.
You know, that tons of work to do on the car with such a not minor role. It was a big role, but, you know, losing brakes. You know, he came in and hit the brakes and just there's nothing he can do. You know, it's not your own mistake where you have that role. It's like you're saying, it's a mechanical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to be mechanical and like, oh, it's a transmission. We're just going to pull over. But another thing to be like, oh, it's a mechanical thing and end up rolling from it.
Yeah.
That's kind of devastating in some ways to your mentality. But Sean seems unfazed coming back into this weekend.
Yeah, that's awesome. That determination is what will give him success.
Exactly. Definitely. Yeah, it's almost like he's, you know, could be a champion or already has, right? but yeah, moving down the line, Matt Dickinson, an open four-wheel drive. You know, last year we saw him limited four-wheel drive battling Javier for that championship in a new car this weekend. There was some speculation. We might have talked about all that on the other podcast, but did you guys get a chance to check out that car?
It's a pretty sick build. Yeah, all-wheel drive with all-drive BRZ with turbocharged DJ in it. So it's smaller, it's lighter, but it has the same power. Just very briefly talking to him and then seeing some of his posts, it sounds like it's a little rocket, that thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and it's an interesting idea because they took basically what they had already, which was, you know, a fully running STI, and then took all of their components that they already had in hand and applied it to a different chassis that would be lighter, which is a pretty good idea. You know, the short answer would have been, ah, cool, I'll just get a Rally 3, but you already have the parts in hand, might as well try and do something interesting with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, weight was their big enemy, basically. So they put the car together and tried a new concept out and made something cool in the end, which is, I think, really fun. It's you know, there are a lot of Subarus out there, a lot of STIs, a lot of, you know, standard sedan bodies, which are amazing, of course, because Dirtfish Rally School is a partnership with Subaru. But it's cool to see something different, and I think that's what's kind of fun about our sport as well.
I think it's really unique to the American Championship, that you get to see these top-level cars in other championships where you do have the Rally 2s, the Rally 3s. They're top-level, purpose-built cars. But there's something quite special about the American Championship of like, hey, we're racing in this vehicle anyway. We want to be getting some more power, some more speed. What are we going to do? You're right. You can
V8 and a Sonic.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. So we're going to get a V8 and a Sonic. We're going to get a Ferrari engine in a Subaru. We're going to build an all-wheel drive BRZ. Like, the American ingenuity looking at the championship is so exciting. You can see it all the way down the field.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly what you're saying. There's the opportunity here in the U.S. rules.
Mm-hmm.
And ingenuity is the... Blah, 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 blah. What is that? I can't remember what I was going for, but you know, we're restricted by what vehicles are available. I mean, if we lived in Europe and could pop down and grab a, you know, used car of some sort that's been heavily run in the championship, great. But for us to get a Rally 2 or anything for that matter over here is extremely cost prohibitive. So mm-hmm. you do the best you can with the parts that you have.
Yeah, and you know, something to think about too is you guys don't have this problem as much here in the Pacific Northwest as we do in the Midwest, and I'm not sure you would probably know. Do you guys salt the roads in the UK?
No, but they give them a good rogering. But that's something to think.
No. I think in some areas they salt the roads, but I know out here they grit the roads and sand them more. Don't quote me on that. I remember using the term salting the roads, but I don't think it's actually salt.
So in the Midwest, having the Great Lakes, we move a lot of salt around with those ships.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, that turns into us de-icing the roads with salt and just completely destroying. You see some 2015s with the sills already rusting out.
Yeah.
And growing up as a kid, I knew very little about historic cars because you don't see them on the roads.
They just don't last.
They either don't exist or people just don't drive them. You know, even when it's wet, there's still that residual salt in the summer because there's so much year after year. So people are very cautious about driving them on the roads. So you see a little bit more historic stuff out here in the Pacific Northwest than you do in the Midwest. Still cool cars out there, but different pockets. You know, it's very spread out.
My favorite historic event, my favorite historic car from this event was John Hill's Mark I Escort. That thing had the look, the sound, everything, because it was the proper kit.
Right. Yeah, the thing's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. How did he do, by the way?
Let me see here. I got everything pulled right up. If I can spell Hill right, it's a very difficult one to spell. So it looks like he made it, yeah. A couple stages and then ended up competing non-compete. Looks like he had some sort of slowdown potentially on stage two, had a 24-minute stage time, so he must have stopped but still able to finish. So I didn't get any specifics on that. I know Billy Irvin, one of my former co-drivers, is kind of heavily involved with this team. I'll have to double back and catch up with him and find out what exactly happened there.
Yeah, he looked good, sounded great. And John is always fast. Like he's at least with his Mark II, always right at the front of the fight in the two wheel drive stuff, and even more so on club events. So surprising to see him far down the order.
Yeah,
yeah, great guy, great car, good package, really good driver. He spends a lot of time vintage racing on road on circuit racing, and is a heck of a hot shoe in that realm. So it's neat to see him come over to the rally world and, yeah, kind of take a couple of years, a couple of events, that sort of thing. And once he had it sorted, it's like, all right, well, forget you, man.
I was wrong there, though. I was looking at the wrong hill. So he did make it all the way till stage 10, and then DNF'd. I was looking at one of the other hills. So just want to clarify so people can. You can still correct me in the comments.
Yeah, Billy will correct you.
Yeah, for sure. He won't let me make those mistakes. Something I wanted to kind of step back a little bit towards the BRZ concept is, I'm seeing this picture over here on the wall, you know, Toyota. When they came out here, and that was the 80s, what was it, the Toyota 86, which was basically the same thing as the BRZ, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But when they came out with that, as that rally team, that was an all-wheel drive car, wasn't it? Am I remembering that correctly?
When Mr. Toyota visited?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And that was a fun bit of our history. We were able to host Tommy Mäkinen and Mr. Toyota, Akio Toyota, and this is all prior to them actually launching a WRC attack. So Mr. Toyota went and drove a Toyota on basically every continent around the world, and they did a big story about it, and we actually have a really cool hardbound book about them visiting. And of course, his personal driving instructor is Tommy Mäkinen,
yeah.
Which isn't so bad. But Tommy at the time was, through his own company, Tommy Mäkinen Racing, was putting together
basically like a proof of concept that, you know, you could build these cars. Also, they could run at a high level, and it definitely worked, because he ended up the boss of the WRC team as they came back in. But yeah, Mr. Toyota's car was a GT86 with basically an STI drivetrain in it. Very, very, very cool car. Obviously, it was immaculate, but really fun to see.
Yeah, it was just, yeah, kind of thinking about that. I remember it being an all-wheel drive and thinking about that as it came out. Like, it's not an all-wheel drive, and they're not really offering that, but they did make an all-wheel drive version just for rally.
Yeah, yeah, and he ran it in a few events. I think he may have been course open car for Finland or something like that. One of those in a couple of stages, yeah.
With Tommy driving?
No, I think Mr. Toyota drove.
Okay.
So he is actually a wheelman, and he's the reason behind a lot of the, you know, Toyota becoming exciting again.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
and building, you know, GR Yaris and Corolla and getting into WRC and he actually raced under a pseudonym in the Nürburgring 24-hour race.
Really?
Yeah. It's a really, really cool story. Check that one out.
Okay. Is that available on dirtfish.com?
I'm not sure that it is, but it is on youtube.com.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can find that story and get our own info on that and add it to dirtfish.com in time.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. But yeah, looking down at the regional rally, we have Andy Miller. Do you guys know Andy?
Yeah. Andy's an awesome guy. He's been a friend of the rallycross community for quite a while. I think we talked about this prior to the event, but it's really cool to see him. He's another motivated guy out of Oregon. Great family, good friends. His co-driver Sean's an awesome guy as well. We've spent lots of time after hours just, you know, cleaning up rallycross stuff, but also just hanging out and having a great time together. Really good attitudes, very driven, and then turns out a heck of a wheelman. So it's really neat to see his progression. I think he's starting to max out the capabilities of his somewhat older car.
Yeah.
So we had a chat at Wild West where he podiumed, and he's thinking, contemplating, like, you know, fancier bits here and there, and then making a concerted effort on the national championship, which some folks should be concerned.
Yeah, he was mentioning that at the end of the weekend here, as he's thinking about doing some sort of national push next year. Maybe not a full season, but at least, you know, kind of bringing some heat, which he's already there pace-wise. It's just, why not enter his national, right?
Yeah, and what's awesome is he still manages to have success, even if he has problems. I think he lost, what, third gear or something like that, and still managed to finish and finish well.
Yeah, it sounded like at the end of day one, he brought that up, that, you know, it's got the dog box in there. I talked to him about that dog box. But yeah, he was skipping third gear. So third gear wasn't working at all. So going second to fourth, and he was saying, you know, Wildcat, that stage is kind of all third gear. So it was, you know, either too low or too high in the gear, and that one was tough. But most of the other stages, he was able to be pretty comfortable with that. The times didn't really reflect too bad, and I think that just is a point to talk about his abilities, right?
Yeah, I think that's an exact example right there.
Yeah,
and that's an interesting, often untalked about aspect of rallying in general, and the driver's, you know, responsibility. There are drivers who can get a car home, and there are drivers who will break something. And the ones who bring the car home in one piece are the ones who finish and at least bring it home. I mean, there's Sam is a great example of that too. Kept his head down. Was second fastest on the power stage, I believe.
Yep. Yeah, I just watched the full stage on board right before this. Yeah, I got a couple little insider video options. I get the opportunity to watch a lot of onboard in my position, and I'm a huge fan of onboard. So yeah, I'll show you that after, and that may be on our dirtfish.com or on YouTube here later today.
I think everyone would appreciate seeing that.
Yeah, yeah, I know, it's pretty cool.
I think, you know, sort of adding to your point, there's a certain amount of, like, improvisation that needs to happen in the sport, right? And not only is it, like, dealing with conditions that you didn't expect and being able to make something happen, it's this constant fight for the end goal, right? So you can be going for pace, but what's the end goal of rallying? It's finishing, whether that's finishing the stage, whether that's finishing the rally itself. And so you end up with a mechanical issue. Anyone could be like, well, it's broken, and then just sort of give up at that point. And it's like, no, the what really sets people apart is like, it's broken, but we're still going. Like, yeah. Something needs to happen for it. Are we going to be running out the stage in, you know, third gear because that's the only one we have, like Sean was dealing with, or with Andy, hey, we don't have third gear, right? How can we still be throwing down stage times? You know, it's that sort of dealing with it in the moment that separates people.
Another aspect of that I saw that was really cool is do you remember who's crewing for Sam, that team? They're all in the gray jumpsuits. They had like three or four cars. They're also crewing for Sean Edwards. I can't remember the name of the specific crew.
I'm not sure of their name, honestly.
Yeah, they've been repeating it all weekend. I forget it. Shout out to you guys for making this happen. But, you know, they have four cars there, and two or three of the cars came in, and they're okay. Sam's there. He's got issues. They had all hands on deck. I think at one point there was like eight people working on Sam's car. I got a video and a photo where you can literally see eight of these gray jumpsuits all touching that car. And that's something kind of different compared to other series, is that, you know, the competitors here are allowed to do that. You're allowed to work on each other's cars and help out. And there's another aspect of the community is everyone jumped in and got their hands dirty.
Yeah, I mean, right at the sharp end of the podium there, you have someone who loaned a car to his direct competitor. That's pretty amazing. I think that's it's a little bit different in our sport, in that, you know, I don't think you necessarily get that when you're wheel to wheel, because you have somebody who's directly your competitor and maybe stole your line or you're mad at them or whatever. But a lot of rally is, you know, survival and making it through to the end all together. And there's almost a camaraderie amongst your direct competitors. So it's way better to win in the stages than lose in the service area.
Yeah. So we had that in 2019. And it's like, hey, we damaged some parts of the car, and we go over to the other Volvo driver who was there. It's like, can we borrow that? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, I'll pay you.
Exactly.
But yeah. It's like that idea of like, hey, we're going to go compete on stage, and when we're driving, that's it. But we're all rallying together for this. It's like you said, this camaraderie and like community that's with it is fantastic and unique, especially in national level motorsport.
Yeah, it's great.
And that's a benefit to running the same type of car.
Exactly. You know, you're like, when it comes down to the Subarus, you know, the GD or whatever the other body style is, like that's kind of the most common car in America for rally. And I had broken axle at Oregon on the Super Specials, and I didn't have to go more than 15 feet to the next team to say, hey, do you guys have any axles? And yep, brand new OEM one in the box. Here you go. No problem. Just get us a new one at the end of the event. Yeah. It's great to see that throughout the field and everywhere in the sport here.
Yeah, I've seen people come from outside, like say road racing or something like that, come in and be shocked when you're willing to give them a full part or tools or whatever, and they're like, really? Like, well, yeah, man. Like, come on, here you go. Let's go battle.
I mean, with that aspect too. I mean, last year in the recce car, I got a flat, and I rolled up to Subaru and I said, hey, do you guys have compressed air? And they're like, why? And I'm like, well, I got a flat tire. And next thing I knew, they had the jacks from Brandon's car, jacking up my rental car, took the wheel off and they patched it up, plugged
stands
it.
Yeah.
I was like, dang, that's all right, guys. Thank you. It was great. You know, just all the community is there to help each other, and seeing a factory team help me out with my recce car or rental car to get around is pretty cool. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Is that the Jeep?
Yeah. Me and Colin were in there, and, we had no spare tire in our rental car, and all we had was that little compressor. So we'd drive about 5 miles, and I'd get out and have to fill the tire back up.
After that weekend, I'm not a Jeep fan. I hate that little thing.
I just hate the fact that we don't have any sort of spare tire in the car anymore. A lot of cars.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that, right? And and when I got that flat, I opened up the trunk, and it said tire repair kit.
Yeah.
It was just a compressor.
Mm-hmm.
what can I repair with a compressor other than the pressure in there? And it was leaking, so it didn't matter.
Maybe you can airbrush a tire on the side of the car.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Now that's one of our new things, right? On all our briefs is when you get the rental car, check to make sure there's a spare in it.
Yes.
It's constant. It's that, maybe you're using it wrong. You put the compressor in the hole.
Yeah.
From outside in. You know, that's the way to go.
Yeah. You know, looking at the rest of the regional field here, Dave Clark bringing it home with the open two-wheel drive win. Dave, you know, been at the game for a very long time out here. I know you know Dave for a while, or kind of go back a little bit there.
Well, again, a super, super nice guy. Always has a smile on his face, and one of those, again, his demeanor doesn't match how much of a demon he is behind the wheel.
Yeah, right?
Because you're like, this guy's really nice, and then he just spanked me.
Yeah. Yeah, he was
figuratively, not literally.
Yeah, and then on the times. Right? So yeah, you know, I had a chance to catch up with David at the end of the stages there, and even rolling into the finish, he was probably 5 to 10 degrees of toe out across the front wheels there, and he'd bent 5 control arms across the whole weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right?
That explains it. Yeah, he was a bit lower on the order than normal.
Yeah, yeah. And then still ended up, you know, getting to the win in the regional, but he said he kind of enjoyed it a little bit because, you know, his turn-ins was, as soon as he turned it a little bit, just the rear would kick out. And it was almost more fun for him to always be sideways there and still bring it at home. But that's great to hear.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you know, finally adding some excitement to rallying. Yes.
Yeah.
In a rear-wheel drive M3.
Yeah.
Moving on down the line, limited four-wheel drive for the regional. Phil Clark and Ed Fleissig, obviously big community members out here, but they went into stage 15 down by 30-some seconds. And I talked to Ed, and they pulled off that time. And I said, Ed, was that your plan? He said, no, Phil didn't tell me that we were going to try to take the win back. And they went into that stage, and they were able to get 31 seconds back and win by, I think, 2 or 3 seconds for that class win.
Unbelievable.
I
mean, what a drive. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and even they had a couple penalties as well. So it was cool to see them pull that off with the penalties and make up 30-plus seconds on the last stage there.
Jeez, that's some Marco Elaine stuff right there. No problem. Maximum attack.
Yeah.
Win the rally now.
Yeah. Looking else.
Yes, that was an American's attempt at finish.
And then a limited two-wheel drive for regional, Jonathan Compton and Bree Moore. Do you guys remember when they came to the school just before Wild West?
Yeah. I was leading the class that they came through, and it was like a, hey, well, we kind of took a little bit of time out, and was it Olympus last year, I think, was their previous event? And right away they came in, I'm leading the class, like, oh, hey, man, what's up?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, picked up where they left off, basically, and it was noticeable when they were in class. It's like, okay, these guys are fast, these guys are proper. So seeing them back out this weekend, we had, with all the whirring that happens at a rally weekend, it was enough that they're driving by, and it was like, oh, hey, what's up, I see you. Yeah. so didn't get a chance to actually catch up with them during the rally, but exciting seeing them, you know, finding pace still and being able to drive smart.
Yeah, yeah, I worked with them right before Wild West in that class as well. Yeah. I was here for that. So I was with Jonathan right in the morning, and he told me, I got some rally experience, but was a little quiet about it at first. And then we did the skid pad. We made it to the slalom, and I'm like, how much rally experience do you have? Because yeah. You're mobbing. He was ripping. And then turns out, yeah, he's done 7 or 8 rallies prior to that and has had good success. So it was, he was proper fast. And then I worked with Bree in the class as well. Also pretty quick, proper fast. And didn't get a chance to catch up with them all weekend until the finish. And when they left the class here, I'm like, yeah, I'll see you guys in the future. I'll come find you for an interview. And now I'm like, well, they've won, so I have to interview them. Like, yes, it's great to see. And
so there you go. If you want to get interviewed by yeah, them, all you got to do is win. It's easy.
It's easy as that, right?
Yeah. Or wreck spectacularly.
Yeah, one of the two. Or flag me down. You know, I always want to interview everybody, but it is impossible, especially when we have 70-plus competitors out there. It would take me, I mean, more time than we have allotted to talk to everybody, but I try to get everybody as much coverage as possible.
Racing, huh?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, exactly. A couple quick words. But
it cars, was... right? All right, see you later.
Yeah, that's my only disappointment from the weekend, is not getting enough time to catch up with everyone. You know, mm-hmm. Some people you don't see for a year, some people you don't see for many years, and you've been seeing them. Ron Barker, one of the organizers, he was heavily involved with the original Olympus when it was a WRC event, and he's still out kicking and didn't really get a chance to, I said hi and a couple words here or there, but that's worthy of like a whole afternoon of just hanging out and tell us what the 80s were like.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many people like getting through this process and talking. You know, I had a really good chance to catch up with Lance Smith from Subaru this weekend. And I'm like, man, we got to get him on a podcast, learning some of his history, telling me he was at those Group B events with John Buffum. I had no clue some of that stuff. And some of that history was there. And there's so many people that, as we learn more about the sport, it's such, you know, it's a tight community. We all kind of know each other, but we don't all know each other's backgrounds. And you see people in passing. There's so many people I want to catch up with at the rally that I haven't talked to in a year or two. And I see them, and it's a quick wave, right? I don't have time, like you're saying, to go catch up with everyone. So there's a lot more coming to this. We're going to strive to get more of these people on some of these podcasts.
It's amazing having a conversation. Someone just throws out something mind-blowing. Just like, oh, yeah, how are the roads out there? How's it going? Yeah, it really reminds me of 87 when we were driving.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. You know, someone we haven't mentioned this podcast yet is John Coyne, you know, winner RC2 in the National. And similar thing. He came through the school 10, 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think he took a one-day class, and I just happened to work with him. You know, I always talk to people in the car, you know, what's your experience? You know, I've done some rallying and stuff like that, and I didn't really think anything of it, you know. Like, what is your experience here? Because you haven't just done some rallying. And he's like, well, you know, I had done some stuff back in the 80s and some of the Group B stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, Group B stuff. And then at the end of the day, I think you were leading that class, Nate. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so it's a well-used story at this point, but every time I see him, I say it, so I apologize. But it was a three-day. At the end of our three-day, we have like a little bit of a understanding of the history of the sport and kind of explain how notes work, and that's why we use them. And then we provide a set of real basic notes for 3-day participants to understand it, so you can get the full rally experience. And we had this black and white photo of a car sliding sideways and as part of it, and had no idea who it was or anything like that. And get through the spiel, and I'm ready to click the slide. And he says, hang on a second, can you go back to that photo? And I'm like, yeah, sure. He's like, that's me. So it just absolutely amazing that we just happened to, of all the pictures of the historic cars in the world for 30 years, 40 years, whatever, we happened to pick that exact photo of him actually racing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't on purpose.
It's so cool. It's, yeah. I actually just saw John Coyne's car drive by this window about 10 minutes before the podcast. They're here reprepping it. You know, another thing we constantly reiterate is the spread outness of the series here. And a lot of the cars here are leaving their cars out west, and Dirtfish is a great place to park your car. It's a great place to drive your car. But John Coyne's got his car out here. I think Seamus Burke, his car is out here. Maybe Ryan Booth as well. A couple others?
A couple others, yeah, including the ARA trailers is parked out there.
Yeah,
so,
I'm going to go stand on the podium just to see how it feels.
I'm amazing.
Yeah, it's great. You know, there's so much competition out there this weekend. We can't touch on all those stories. There's only so much we can do and accomplish out here, but we are trying to bring everybody coverage. We want to talk to everybody. We want to promote the sport as much as we can, and we're trying, you know. What's your guys' perspective on that?
Well, I think if you want to step onto that podium, I think you can comfortably jump on the top step there for media coverage for the Olympus Rally, Brent.
Yeah, I will. I'm gonna try out third for a few minutes, try out second, and then, you know, finally, once I'm feeling good about that height, I'll get up to first place there. It's a pretty tall podium they have on that one, being on that trailer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, with the media coverage that we're doing, like, I've mentioned it a couple of times now, the American Championship is so unique, and the American community is so unique. A phrase that we kind of took on through the Live Center last year was, there was more to the rally than the race.
Exactly.
You can go somewhere and you can look up these times, but the championship is filled with, you know, passion of drivers wanting to go out and get involved in this sport. There's passion in the mechanics and the engineering for the different cars that are being built through all of it. And everyone in it is a rally nerd with their own story that have been doing this for years. It very quickly becomes just this lifestyle. It's like you said, that's my car. And they're your competitor. And it gets lost looking at just the times and the rallying. So, like Brenton said, come talk to us. Go talk to everybody there. We want to highlight, like, how special this championship is, because there is no national championship in the world with that level of, you know, intrigue and history in it.
Definitely. You know, speaking of seeing your old cars out there, do you guys know Chris Sutton?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he was in someone's old car this weekend, and I talked to Brandon Seminook, and it turns out that was one of his old cars that he had raced in the CRC for a while. Do you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's a very guy, nice guy who's come down and raced a bunch in our Rallycross series here.
He's got that little Renault as well, doesn't he?
Yeah. So immediately my rally nerd went, ooh.
Yeah. Is it a Group 2 Clio, if I'm remembering rightly?
Yeah, and it actually ran in the British Championship, mm-hmm. and I believe won its class. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, proper quick car. To have a Renault Clio, proper stage car, show up for a rallycross was quite a shock. So yeah. I was immediately friendly to her.
Yeah. I think he ran Olympus last year too, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there. And that was the stepping stone that Chris was shooting for, is to get actually into stage. So wanted to get some
you know, do some teething and work through all the stuff and then get comfortable with the car. And then got an opportunity to get the cross track, which all of us were drooling over because that's a proper quick mm-hmm. car. It was, you know, built for Brandon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We've been wondering, it's like, who's going to get that thing? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, boom, it shows up.
You know, if you're going to try to get into stage rally, why not start with the championship car and then move to another championship car? Right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a pretty good theory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's like my first car, you know, Peugeot 206 WRC.
Yeah.
Like, obviously. Yeah. It just makes the most sense.
Right. Yeah. I went straight with the S1E2. You have to.
Yeah. Perfect. Yeah.
Threw an extra wing on it.
More wings. Well played.
Yeah. You know, we could talk all day, guys, here, and we probably still will once we stop recording. Mm-hmm. But I think we got to come to an end here. You know, it's almost an hour long in this podcast. And
yeah, that equates to Brenton's 15 minutes, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, whenever I ask these guys to do a podcast, all we need is 15 minutes. We'll fill this with interviews, and we kind of just summarize the words that we have from people. So a little bit different podcast than you're used to here on this one. Hopefully it was still enjoyable. Hopefully you're still listening. If you've made it this far, you're still listening, hey. Obviously, about an hour in. So
sure to like and subscribe. Oh, wait.
like, subscribe, hit that like button, all that stuff. But, you know, give us some feedback on these podcasts, guys. You know, if you've made it this far, you obviously care to hear more of this content. We want to bring more of this community style content to you guys and share these stories that we have. We all have so many different perspectives in the sport from America, and we're trying to bring more cool people onto these podcasts. If you happen to catch David's podcast with Chris Meek and Brandon Seminuk from New Zealand, I thought that was one of the coolest podcasts we've had in a while. That was a great one. Did you guys have a chance to watch that one?
Oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We actually listened to it on the way down to Olympus.
Okay, nice.
It was really fun, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Thank you. So am I Chris Meek, or is he Brandon Seminuk, or is that kind of the same? So we're going for here.
We'll have you guys race it out.
I'll be Chris Meek.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. That's a little closer.
Yeah.
He's got an accent, right?
Exactly.
Well, cool, guys. Again, we can keep going
on that note
all day. Yeah, we'll wrap this up. Stay tuned. A couple weeks time, we are heading to Oregon Trail Rally. Mm-hmm. We'll have all the news there. And I think next for WRC is Portugal, mm-hmm. if I'm mm-hmm. remembering the calendar. A lot of events to remember these days, but stay yeah. tuned.
Speaking of me, Chris Meek, I'm competing in that one as well. So.
Yeah.
Check me out.
Yeah, me, Brandon Seminuk, I'm going to dominate Oregon Trail. So.
Yeah.
Right. Hell yeah.
That's about it, guys. I don't know how else to wrap this up. I've already done my spiel. And
thank you very much for coming out to the event and checking out the Pacific Northwest. I mean, this is our home territory out here, and it's always exciting, and glad that everyone could enjoy it and check it all out.
That does it. Stay tuned on dirtfish.com.